You know, he wasn't a tanker pilot, but saw Colonel Cole, Dick Cole, today. He was riding out going to dinner, and hopefully he won't keep his daughter and his handlers up too late tonight if he's tending bar. But the Doolittle Raiders continued to say, put me in, coach. Put me in, coach. We know it's a dangerous mission, but every mission's just put me in. I'm ready to go. And they continued to answer that call. And I think what you're touching on is really unique, because even though we call them the greatest generation, today's active duty and reserve and guardsmen, they are all volunteer, and they have all answered that call. So our thanks to each and every one of you tonight. I want to get in some questions tonight, because I know that this audience has questions about tankers. They want to know all the details and the nuts and bolts. This is a flying crowd, and if they could, they're going to go home tonight and try and figure out how to build one themselves. So we'll have that down there in the 7-day workshop later on today. So let's hear from you tonight. Before we get ready, we're going to get you out of here in plenty of time for the night air show. Steve's ready. And look, we already have a taker, Steve. And here's the microphone for you. Steve Weaver, the chairman here, is going to run around, and we're going to get some questions tonight. Let's see. This guy looks pretty nice. He's wearing a yellow shirt, probably a cub driver. Let's see.
I'm not sure I'm that nice, but we'll go with it. Uh-oh. General Miller, what is your command? And General Fogelman, did you end up in the toilet business?
What was the question?
Say that again one more time.
General Miller, what's your command?
What is your command?
And I'll get a follow-on in a second.
Okay. Commander of the Air Force Reserve Command.
Got it. And General Fogelman, you talked about buying a toilet business. Did you end up buying it?
Absolutely. We bought the business. We turned it into the largest portable toilet business in Southwest Colorado. So if you're out there and you visit Mesa Verde National Park or any of the other places around, you'll be taking advantage of what is now my son's business. We've transitioned it, but it turned out to be everything that we anticipated. The biggest caution I got when I bought the thing, Miss Jane and I are members of the local Rotary Club, was that when we went to the Rotary Club, that we should always use tongs to pick things up. Otherwise,
there you go.
It would poison the entire table.
So. Thanks very much.
There you go. Well, very, very sorry, panelists. This forum has officially now gone to the, well, anyway. Chris Henry, how did this happen? Here we are celebrating the tanker, and we're talking about toilets. That's my fault, General, so my apologies. Here we have another question out there. I know there's somebody out there. Let's see.
We have one.
There we go.
What strategies or other ideas do you have to address the pilot shortage and the issue we have in this country with people entering the STEM fields?
All right, who wants that one?
You know, the Air Force right now, actually for the last 6 years, we have been tackling this problem. More specifically, in the last 2 years, really getting after it in multiple lines of effort. We're looking at how do we train a pilot? Do we need to go after pilot training a different way? Do we use contractors more? How about Red Air for fighters? Do we use contractors? So when you look at the pilot shortage, it's a national shortage. In fact, it's an international shortage. Every country has a shortage of pilots. So there's a lot of lines of effort the Air Force are getting after. We're also pursuing STEM in a very aggressive way. Chief and Secretary have been aggressive working with Congress on bonuses and incentives, and each component is doing the same thing. We're all trying to keep our pilots. In the Air Force, and actually in all three components, the Active Guard and Reserve, we are short 2,000 pilots right now. We are beginning to see a leveling of that. We've got a long way to go. But we are looking at alternatives. We're not leaving anything out, and we're looking at every alternative that we can. And coming here and bringing the civilian and the military piece together is crucial. I went to a conversation with all the CEOs from the airlines, and you know, we literally are, when you take a pilot, a commercial pilot, most of them fly in the Guard or Reserve, and they've got a hold of one arm and we got a hold of the other, you know, and it's gonna be that way. It's gonna be that way for a long time. And it needs to be that way. So how do we better work with the active, or how do we better work with the industry out there, the airline industry, to to share that resource, because we are going to be sharing the resource. So it's more about how do we share the resource, how do we think differently to train pilots, to get them through quicker. We've got pilots lined up to come through. Right now, we are struggling getting them through because we brought the infrastructure down over the years. And you can't just turn that around on a dime. So what we need to do is, how do we produce more? How do we absorb more? How do we get them up on the step as pilots quicker? So those are the things we're going after, and very aggressively. And we are making an impact, but not to the degree that we need to right now. So we are still pushing ahead and thinking, how best do we get after this?
All right, well said. We want to get in lots of questions here tonight. Someone's going to ask about Europe. I think this guy is. We'll see.
Europe? My father was in the reserve from 48 to 75, retired his commission as a lieutenant colonel. Because he stayed in the reserve, after he passed, it allowed my mother to live a more comfortable life because of his deferred payments. And so there are multiple reasons to be in the reserve, and you can push those as well as service to our country. But I want to ask the tanker pilots, retired and active, who's flying the plane when you're refueling? I mean, I heard that the boom operator say, well, slow down or do this, but doesn't that create a delay that can create a problem when you're refueling?
There is a slight delay, but the tanker pilots are flying the aircraft. In fact, they are responsible from the moment they start to affect the rendezvous. We are responsible for the air navigation of the flight of airplanes. So the tanker pilots are flying the aircraft. Now, we didn't have all the bells and whistles that a KC-10 had, nor did we have all the bells and whistles that a KC-135R model had. We had an old A model aircraft. So we didn't have nifty little things. So it was all calculation up there, one each brain, to think out, okay, logically, how do we do this? And there's a lot, as General Fogelman mentioned, there's a lot of cross-cockpit conversation that's going on, interphone conversation amongst the crew, trying to decide, let's do this, let's do that. And you're hearing, you know, you pick up, and I put my hat off to Strategic Air Command, because we flew at that time what was known as a hard crew. I knew Doug's weaknesses as he knew my weaknesses. We didn't change crew members around. So you lived, ate, slept, pulled alert together as a hard crew. So you knew each other. And you knew what we can depend upon each other. So I think SAC was, you know, visionary in that respect. But we, getting back to your original question, we, the tanker pilots, are flying the aircraft. You may have some assistance with an autopilot sometimes, but it's the tanker pilots that are flying.
And we tell them to, the boom operators back there, they are our eyes and ears back there. So they relay what we can't see is going on back there. So we are the ones in control, but they give us a lot of input. And we definitely work with them and use our crew resource management together.
Exactly.
And I want to point out something. General Miller, maybe you can address this. How do you, and we'll throw this to you down there too. I want to bring this up from the Guard and the Reserve perspective. How do you balance, and what do you want the business owners that are out here to know about an employee that is trying to do this and trying to make this work?
Support is needed. Every American serves, whether you're in uniform or not. We all serve, and we support our members that are serving. It's just critical to where we are. We don't have the numbers in our armed forces that we need. A lot of that's due to the budget constraint that we're under, and that's just reality. So wherever you can let that guardsman or reservist participate, you need to do it.
And General Dunbar, anything you want to add to that? I'm sure this folks here in the great state of Wisconsin are pretty supportive.
Well, the people in Wisconsin and our employers are supportive all across the country, not just in Wisconsin. And I think General Miller hit it very well. The thing I would add to it is we do need the support of our employers. You can't defend the country just with active duty personnel. It'd be cost prohibitive, it would drive the tax base up, things that the country doesn't want. I would point out that I think it's been the brilliance of our Air Force leadership, including the gentleman to the right of me, chiefs of staffs through the years, who have recognized the value of the Guard and Reserve and being able to leverage that experience without paying full price, if you will. The fact that they're not getting all the full benefits that active duty certainly gets when they're on active duty and they should get. But most of our personnel are part-time. And when I talk to employers, the thing I talk to the employers about is the quality of the men and women that we share and that the employers have a responsibility to defend this country in addition to the men and women who wear in the uniform. And most of them, I think, are on board with that. It does take the entire country to defend this great nation we live in. Thank you.
All right, well said. We have time, I think, for one more question, Steve, before we have to wrap things up. We have one right down in the front here, I think. There's some more stars shining brightly down there. I think that's General Miller down there, too. Let's see what we have to say.
This question's for General Fogelman. You've been known as a big proponent of total force, sir. Can you give us your conception of what it means to the nation and how do we continue to build total force?
Well, I think General Dunlap just did a great job of describing that. But from an active duty perspective, this has got to be a partnership, and it goes beyond just those people who are serving today. I would go back and add a little bit to this. What do we need to do to solve the pilot crisis we have, not only within the military, but as a nation? And I'm going to give a plug to our sponsors here. The EAA, with the Young Eagles program, with things by the time a young lady or a young man gets to be of the age where they have to start thinking about careers, you know, high school, entering college, this sort of thing, if aviation has not in some way or another been introduced to them, whether it's through formal programs, junior ROTC, whatever it happens to be, it's going to be very difficult to capture the numbers that we need. So sometimes people question the cost and the value of things like these air shows or the programs that you, the members of EAA, support. These are vital to the overall security of the United States in the sense of the population's awareness and you grow it. And to me, as a senior leader, it became obvious that, as pointed out by General Dunlap, if you tried to have the size of an active force that you needed to protect this country, it would be such a burden on the taxpayers that they probably would not be willing to pay it. Whereas the total force idea, where we can not only depend on citizen airmen, but we also have an avenue for those airmen, enlisted officers, because we've got to remember it's the total spectrum, that when, for whatever reason, they choose to leave the active force, that there is a place where they can go and where we can keep their skills. We can retain those skills that were so hard-earned on active duty. And as the gentleman down here said, one of the nice benefits about this is that you not only serve your country in whatever civilian capacity you do, and you continue to serve as a guardsman or a reservist, at that point in your life where you're going to step back and hopefully be able to relax a little bit, there is a retirement out there that is not inconsequential. And so more people need to know about that. But the whole idea that that you could do this with active duty people alone is not even on the equation. And I'm very proud of the fact that I think the United States Air Force kind of led the other services. I'm not slamming my Army or Marine or Navy friends, but the nature of our business, so technical, with an international requirement and presence, forced us to really become engaged in a total force policy, which occurred back in the 1970s, but we have moved it forward. So with that, I'll just say, you all are as important to the military as the military is to you.
All right, well, thank you so much.